Oh man, this is the show I've been looking forward to for a long time. It's the Catholic Answers Kids Show, where the families of Catholic Answers employees get to come in. Families, friends, neighbors. And if you've got any kids that are important in your life, you get to bring them in. If you work here today, there's free cookies. I have put myself nearly into a stupor from the number of cookies I have eaten. And there's a whole bunch of the Staples kids got here first. So the Staples kids are going to get to ask questions first. Kids show means kids get to ask anything they want about the Catholic faith. And we said, you know what? Who better to do that than Tim Staples? So Tim said, I'll come in, I'll do both hours. And then he proceeded to get sick. He got a, and so he said to me today, I got to send you back up. And I got the best guy in the world for you. And I was like, Jimmy Akin. And he said, nope, it's Trent Horn. Hello, Trent.
Hello, Si. I think it's appropriate to be here for me to do a kids' Q&A because for a while, this has subsided at least somewhat. For a while, I was introduced around here. And this is Trent Horn, our boy apologist, boy wonder.
Yeah.
Terms I'm not a big fan. I am married. Really? I have two children. I'm almost... you know, halfway,
almost 13.
Almost about almost halfway between 30 and 40. So I'm okay though with Wunderkind.
It's not bad to look as young as you look though. That's a good thing.
There was a time where I didn't like being called Boy Wonder or Wunderkind. Wunderkind is quite fine with me. But now I'm like, you know,
I think that is okay.
I'm all right.
Anybody ever put the word wonder with it. They just said, this is the boy apologist. You put the word in your mind. You put the word wonder.
No, it's boy wonder. It's
Robin the boy wonder.
Boy apologist sounds like a Christmas special of some kind. Like I'm Tiny Tim.
A very special episode with Trent Horn, boy apologist.
The boy apologist who saved Christmas.
All right, we got kids coming in.
We do.
We got a microphone set up over there.
We do.
They're going to be Catholic Answers kids or kids from Catholic Answers families who are going to come in. And I wonder if there's anybody ready. Luke, you got anything for us? Anybody ready to ask a question? Which Staples is going to go first? Marie, send us one of the Staples. Oh, Rose? Come on in, Rose. Come on. She's coming.
They're on their way.
So there are about 1 million kids associated with Catholic Answers right now because there's a lot of young families around here. So hello, Rose. Rose Staples. Your father is Tim Staples, is that correct?
Yes.
Come on, right up next to the mic. And Tim is Trent's boss, and he's my boss, so we're going to be super nice to you, okay?
Okay.
And you came ready with a question, Rose?
Yes.
Rose, before we go, you're what year in school? We should probably let people know what year you are in school.
I'm in sixth grade.
Sixth grade. You are a very good sixth grader. Rose, also we're asking every kid today your favorite pie. What's your favorite kind of pie?
Well, it would probably be my dad's strawberry banana pie. You had it
at
our house.
Every kid in your family is going to say my dad's strawberry banana pie. Have you ever had it?
I've never had.
Oh, what? I've had Tim Staples pie and you haven't had it yet.
I have not had the joy of
your
Tim
life
Staples
is gonna be
strawberry
changed.
Banana pie.
Your life is going to be changed.
Here's what's hard. I'm not a big fan of bananas, so the strawberry is going to have to be extra overwhelming.
Do you want to know something? My wife's not a big fan of bananas either, and she
really?
Said this pie is so good.
I'm going to take her word for that.
All right, let's let Rose Staples ask her question.
I wrote it down. So what would have happened if Adam and Eve had never sinned, then they had children... and one of their children sinned.
Wow. Wow, Rose came prepared.
Well, what would have happened? Now we're entering in the realm of speculation, which is always an area where it's kind of a what-if scenario. So if Adam and Eve, they had children, and so they remained in God's friendship, and it was possible. It was possible for them to continue to remain in God's friendship and to keep his commands and obey him and not fall into original sin. But it's so that is possible. And then it could have been possible one of their descendants would have been the ones to initiate original sin. Like, for example, maybe original sin could have started when, if you remember your Bible trivia, what happened with Adam and Eve's kids? One of them killed the other one. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Who was involved in that fiasco? Do you remember their names?
Abel and Cain.
That's right. Cain was not very happy with Abel. And so It could have been the case that their children, if they had committed sin, would have initiated a rebellion against God, and then all of their future descendants would have been, their natures would have changed, and so they would not have had the gift of those preternatural gifts of grace and friendship with God that they had or that their parents Adam and Eve had. So it could have turned out differently, but all we know is what happened now was that it was just our first parents who sinned. And because of that, that grace was lost, but has been given back to us in baptism through Jesus Christ. So is that a helpful speculation for you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm so glad that you stopped by. And can you do a favor for me?
Sure.
Can you go get me a cookie from outside of the studio?
What's up? You're putting her to work.
I got to get him to work here.
She got her answer. Now she's got to get put to work.
So they're outside on a table out there. If you could grab me one, I would really enjoy that.
Are you serious?
He's quite serious. Trent would like a cookie right now, I can tell. Rose, thank you very, very much. It's always nice to see you.
Thank you for coming in.
And you, if you think of another question, you're welcome to come back later, all right? But enjoy the cookies in the meantime.
All right.
It is Catholic Answers Kids Open Forum today, and we're taking questions from the kids of Catholic Answers staff. But I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to mix in every now and then callers. If we have a young person that calls with their question, we're going to do our best to get to at least some of those calls. So, and we do have a call on the line right now, so I want to make sure that I get to Noel in Colorado. Noel, are you there with us?
Say hi, Noel.
Hi.
Hi, Noel. How old are you?
Five.
And what is your question?
Where did the name Christmas come from?
Where did the name Christmas come from? That is an excellent question, Noel. Where did it come from, Trent?
And Noel, you have a perfect name to be asking this question, the first Noel. Christmas comes from the Old English, our Middle English and Old English word, Christemas. It basically comes from Christ's Mass. So Christmas is the special celebration of Mass to commemorate the nativity and birth of our Savior. So we celebrate Mass where we offer the sacrifice of Jesus on the altar, and that sacrifice is only possible because God became man, and we have Mass celebrated in all kinds of different feast days. And one of the most special feast days we celebrate Mass is the celebration of when Jesus Christ was born. So Jesus Christ's birth gets its own Mass to celebrate. It's the Christ Mass, and we call that Christmas. And that's where the name comes from. So is that helpful for you?
How's that?
Yeah.
Noel, are you planning on having a Merry Christmas?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I hope you do have a Merry Christmas. Thank you for calling. I hope you'll call again, okay?
Thank you,
Noel. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Kids Open Forum with Trent Horn right after this.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
a
priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are
committed. As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Christmas is approaching, and it's now a tradition here at Catholic Answers that during the Advent season, the kids of the Catholic Answers families get to come in and ask their questions of an apologist. The apologist helping us today is Trent Horn, a wonderful apologist and speaker here, and also writer of many books, including Counterfeit Christs. He's also the podcaster behind the Council of Trent, which you can find at trenthornpodcast.com. Luke Staples is going to be next, so get your question ready, Luke. I just have to read something real quick. At shop.catholic.com, we've got hundreds of downloadable gifts. You can sign up instantly for our new School of Apologetics. For the first time ever, we've got Catholic Answers gift certificates, and we've got hundreds of ebooks, e-magazines, and MP3s for everyone on your list. Visit us today at shop.catholic.com. Hello, Luke Staples. How are you?
Hey, Mr. Kellett. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you. What year in school are you, Luke?
I am in the eighth grade, 13 years old. It's been a little bit of a long life. Not as long as everybody else, but a pretty long life.
That's right. Well, one of the longest in your family. I think you're the fourth longest in your family after your mom, your dad, and Timmy.
Yes.
So you've done well for yourself. You've made it to this age. I hope it goes on for years and years. How about a question for Trent?
Yes. So, Mr. Horn, I hear that you're really good with apologetics, so I have a question.
I hope your dad's the one that told you that, so alrighty.
Boy, does he hope your dad's the one that told you. Yeah.
Go right ahead.
So, we know that Jesus Christ, the only begotten Son of God, is a part of the Trinity that is God Himself, three persons and one God in their relationship that goes on.
Yes.
So, I'm wondering how Jesus Christ, while being a part of the Trinity, also obtained a human nature while having a divine nature also.
Luke, I would have appreciated it if you had brought in a little bit of a tougher question.
Yeah, really. Why are you giving the easy ones to Trent? How did God become a man?
We don't want the softballs here. Well, let me ask you a question. Where do you see the difficulty in Jesus Christ, who is God the Son, also having both a human nature and being a part of the Trinity? What is difficult for you in seeing that? Where do you see the difficulty?
Well, as human beings, we have a human nature, and then God, He has a divine nature, and then our nature is what we are. Mm-hmm. Well, when we are what we are, we usually do not change unless God wills it. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus Christ being in his divine nature, also obtaining a human nature would seem, at least in human logic, impossible.
Okay, so it sounds like your concern then is it's not so much about the Trinity, it's more about how could Jesus Christ, being a divine person, assume a human nature? Like, imagine even if God were just one person, it seems like your question, you'd still be concerned, how can God become man? Doesn't he undergo change in some way?
Yes, because as God, he is beyond everything else. So becoming something that is less than him would seem to change him.
Sure. And what I would say...
Holy smokes, Luke. I'm sorry, but that is a really tough question.
Yes, it is a very tough question. So if we have to first admit that the incarnation, how God becomes man, is a mystery. Not in the sense that we can't understand it at all, but we're never going to completely be able to understand it. And I think some people have a hard time wrapping their heads around this, how God can become man. And because they can't fully explain it, they can't fully understand it, they reject it. And I don't think that's a good idea just because we can't understand it. Because, for example, if God is all powerful, if we say he could not become man, don't you think that would limit his power and he wouldn't really be all powerful?
Yes.
Okay. So then I think we can see, all right, so it's conceivable, and we have to work it out in our mind, how can that be? Well, what I would say is that in God, what changes, it's a change in relationship with us. Nothing in the divine person, nothing in the person of God the Son ever changed in the incarnation. Rather, God assumed a human nature, and he assumed it and then acted through that nature that was completely joined to his person. Within the person of Jesus Christ, nothing undergoes change there. But in assuming a human nature, what changes now is humanity's relationship to God. Now that God has become man, we're able to relate to him in a completely different way. Things are completely different in how we can see that God is represented visually, in that he has a human body, for example. And so I think the fathers of the church put it this way: when God became man, it wasn't God that changed, it was man that changed. That humanity was forever changed when God assumed that human nature into his divine person fully united to his divine nature. So as long as the divine person and divine nature does not change and God is all powerful, so he has no limits on his powers, then he can assume a human nature and express his divinity through those human ways of coming to know him. So I think when we look at it in that way, there's not a problem here. Does that help solidify it a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, good.
Well, thank you very much, Luke. I believe that Trent has been asking people to bring him cookies, so you're perfectly free to just go out there and ignore that.
Or if you see one of the chocolate ones, you can bring that in, too.
I'll bring him some cookies if he needs them.
You're a good man, Luke.
You're a good man,
Luke. Thanks very, very much.
Very good, sir. If I go through these, I'll hit up some more.
It's a Kids Open Forum today at Catholic Answers Live. People that work here have been invited to bring their kids in and hang out and have some cookies and ask questions. So kids are taking turns. Marie is sending us children in order. But as we switch between kids here in the building, we'll do our very best to take calls. So I don't want to make any promises. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but we'll do our very best to take calls. So let's go to Cormac. Cormac in Houston, Texas, you are next. Are you there with us?
Yeah. I was wondering, so if the liturgical year starts on the first Sunday of Advent and ends on the feast day of Christ the King, what happens about the couple days in between?
That's a good question, Cormac. I do not know exactly what those days would be, where they would fall. Odds are they would probably have the same status, even if they don't have the same name. They may have the same status as the days we would have in ordinary time. But I'd have to look that one up to get back to you. You can go to the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. They have a whole liturgical calendar there outlining all of the different days. So I'd recommend that you go to the U.S. Bishops website and you can look up 2019 and the 2020 liturgical calendar. And so you could check that there, and it tells the difference between the two where those days would fall. But thank you for calling in.
Okay, Cormac.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. It's Kids Open Forum. And mostly we're taking questions from the kids here in the building who have eaten cookies. And so they're fired up and ready to ask their questions. Catherine Staples. It has been an all Staples hour so far. We're so happy to have Catherine. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
And what year are you in school, Catherine?
Third grade.
And you have a question for Mr. Horn?
Yes. How did Adam and Eve live off of fruits from trees?
They probably turned them into salads.
So you're saying fruit salad that was our primordial food as human beings?
It could have been fruit salad or a mixture of salad with fruit. You might have had lettuce in there. I mean, it's a good staple of salads.
Yeah.
So, or were you wondering something else, like how does somebody live off of fruits and vegetables?
Yes.
Well, Adam and Eve had special graces from God to protect them. So if you remember reading the Bible, that God said you can eat of every tree in the Garden of Eden except for one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, but God gave every green leaf, green fruit, you know, of these trees for Adam and Eve to eat. And that's enough to sustain them. In fact, there are people today who actually can live off of eating fruits and vegetables of the earth without animal products. They're people called vegans. You ever heard of them?
No.
Mm-hmm. You never heard of a vegan?
No. Oh,
so I guess at your house, do you like eating things like eggs and milk and ham? Yeah.
And steak.
So the Staples household is not a vegan household. So there are people who can live off of things that are just grown in the earth, like beans, and you get your protein that way. But here's how I would answer the question, Catherine, that God helped to keep Adam and Eve alive. Because remember, he promised Adam and Eve would never get sick and die, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, because our bodies, no matter how much we eat, our bodies wear down over time. Like, we get old and we get sicker. And eventually our bodies aren't meant to last forever. They can't process enough energy to keep going. They get worn down. But God gave Adam and Eve a special gift. He said, your bodies will never wear down. I'll sustain them. And he would have kept them alive indefinitely. But they ate the fruit they weren't supposed to eat, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. And so then they lost that gift.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened, that God was able to sustain them. But there's actually people today who can live off of eating things that grow from the earth and aren't from animals. So does that help you?
Yes, but I've got to ask you one more question.
Okay. Sure.
Can you please don't make Rose grab you a cookie? You should just go over there and get it yourself.
He's working right now. I can't let him leave. I got to keep him here, Catherine. Sorry, but thank you.
I'll tell you what, Catherine, because you are forthright, I will not ask you to get me a cookie. So
good.
Okay. And
you should do it yourself.
The Stables children are taught to be self-sufficient. Catherine, you're named after a saint, right?
Saint Catherine of Siena.
Well, thank you very, very much for coming in, Catherine. It's always a pleasure. Please go enjoy your cookies while there are still some there, because I see Mr. Tom Nash, who was a guest on the show yesterday, is out there eating the children's cookies. So get out there before he eats all of them.
They're so good. So good, Ty.
It's Kids Open Forum today, and the kids here from Catholic Answers are coming in and taking their turn at the microphone as they get their courage together to come in and do that. But we're also taking calls as well. So I think we've got time, and we will go to Emma in Missouri. Emma, are you there with us?
Yes.
Hello, Emma. How old are you?
9.
9. All right. How's the weather in Missouri, Emma?
It goes off and on. So sometimes it's cold, sometimes it's hot.
Okay. So sometimes cold, sometimes hot in Missouri. Your question for Mr. Trent Horn. Emma, did you want to ask your question?
Do you have a question for me?
Yes.
All right.
Why is Saint Raphael and Saint Gabriel and Saint Michael considered a saint?
Ah, very good. You named all the that's all the biblical angels, right? Or maybe one more, but
there are three that are named
in the Bible.
Named in scripture, yes.
Okay, so she got all three of the biblical angels, and we call them saints. Why is that?
Well, Emma, we call those angels saints because they are holy people who are in heaven. So the word saint comes from a Greek word hagios, which means the holy ones. So saint is a term we use to refer to a person who is in heaven who deserves respect and honor. So human beings only become canonized saints. They become saints we recognize in the church once they're in heaven. So human beings are here on earth and they go to heaven and they become saints. Our job here on earth is to become saints. Angels like Gabriel or Raphael or Michael, they are holy people in heaven who were always in heaven ever since God created them. They are the angels that chose to follow God, and they never disobeyed God. See, at the very beginning, about a third of the angels made a pretty bad choice, and they disobeyed God, and they followed a fallen angel named Lucifer, we call the devil. But the angels that obeyed God and made a timeless decision to always follow him and are always in heaven, so they are also, some of them are called saints, because we use that title to recognize they are a holy person in heaven who deserves respect and honor. They've always been in heaven. Human beings become saints in this sense after they die and go to heaven. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Emma, are you planning on having a Merry Christmas?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I hope that works out for you. I hope you do have a Merry Christmas. Thank you very much for your call.
You're welcome.
Okay. I hope we'll talk to you again sometime. Sophie, are you coming in? Sophie, coming in? Yeah, sure. We'll wait. Okay. Sophie will be in after the break. So we do have time.
Yeah, we got a little bit of time here.
Let's see. Okay. So let me just establish something with you, because I do want to make sure I give each child that calls enough time to get their question answered. And then Sophie's going to come in from here in the studio in a second. You are obviously on some kind of sugar high. So
you can't bring me down.
Emma's question just now about the angels being saints. We get to heaven, right? Mm-hmm. If God willing, we make it to heaven, then we're saints too, right?
Yes.
So we're all holy. Everybody in heaven is holy.
That's correct.
Who's got more there though? People, like human people, or angel people? And are angels people?
Of course, yes. Yeah. Angels are persons without bodies. They are spirits. So a person, to use the philosopher Boethius' definition, a person is an individual substance with a rational nature. So an individual being or substance, something that endures over time, has continuity and mm-hmm. identity over time, with a rational nature. That's what a person is. So
angels are people, then.
Yeah, so the two persons we are aware of that exist, we speak of God as a trinity of three persons, so the word person there has to be used kind of as an analogy, because God is so different than we are.
Right.
But human beings are persons, angels are persons. If we ever met extraterrestrials, it's possible there could be material beings that are persons that are not human.
Right.
Possibly. We don't know.
Or dolphins. Some dolphins.
So angels...
I'm just kidding. Sorry about the dolphins.
Somebody's been watching Flipper too much. So angels are persons. They're persons without bodies. That makes them distinct. They're pure spirit.
I gotcha. All right. Trent Horn is our guest. We're all hopped up on the cookies around here. There's lots of kids. Sophie's coming in the studio. But first, we'll go to Robert in Texas right when we get back. Hang on, Robert. Coming up to your question.
Your questions, Catholic answers, live.
Everybody's favorite Catholic outer space delivery pilots return for their greatest adventure yet in the brand new graphic novel, Weapons of War. Fresh from saving the solar system in The Truth Is Out There and saving the timeline of salvation history in The Big Picture, Brendan and Irk land in a magnificent domed city on Mars for what is supposed to be a simple shuttle job. But soon they find themselves caught up in a sinister assault on faith and freedom. Will Mars be lost to the enemy? Brendan and Irk's only hope for the flight is in the power of God's sacramental gifts. A totally new kind of Catholic resource for apologetics and evangelization, The Truth Is Out There series combines the visual excitement and quirky humor of graphic novels with solid popular philosophy and theology. The result is a series in which everyone from teens to adults can find accessible answers to questions about God, the soul, true happiness, and much more. Order your copy of Weapons of War today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Looking for the best and solid Catholic resources that can answer your questions on all things Catholic? Looking for books, audio, and DVDs by the top Catholic thinkers and speakers on the planet today? Stop in today and visit the shop at Catholic.com. All of our resources are time-tested, apologist-vetted, and trustworthy and faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. There's no better source for solid Catholic resources anywhere on the internet. When you're shopping for good Catholic books, CD, DVDs, and more, turn to someone you can trust. Visit the shop at Catholic.com today. That's shop.catholic.com.
Monday on More to Life, the power of family.
We'll help you create the family life you're longing for.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Kids Open Forum. Trent Horn is our guest. We're all dressed up in our Christmassy outfits. I got my scarf on. We got the stockings behind us. Trent is wearing his some kind of millennial polka dotted shirt. I guess that's what that you wear for Christmas.
I think these are not polka dots.
It sounds like I'm not the first one who said that.
It's patterned.
You sound very sensitive about that. I apologize, Trent.
I don't
Trent.
Sound sensitive.
No, I think like polka dots are very nice.
Getting the pronoun nice. They are nice, but I don't believe this is a polka dotted shirt.
It's a
dotted shirt.
It's a dotted shirt.
It's fair. A dotted. Polka dots are very distinct pattern, I believe.
Right. I wonder if it's polka, like P-O-L-K-A. Like,
isn't it?
Or is it... I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know if it has any connection to the art form, to the dance.
Let's go to Robert in Texas, because he's been waiting a while.
Let's do it.
And Robert has a question for you. Hello, Robert in Texas. Are you there with us?
Yes.
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
And
hi.
How old are you, Robert?
I'm 8.
And what is your question, please?
My question is, why doesn't God kill the devil now and free the world from sin instead of waiting for the second coming?
Excellent question. That is an excellent question. Why doesn't God do it that way, Trent Horn?
Well, Robert, actually, the Bible does say that the devil is restrained. It talks about how the devil is restrained right now. It talks about the millennium in the book of Revelation. And different Christians have interpreted that in different ways. But historically, a traditional interpretation is that the devil has been bound by God. He still tempts people. The first letter of Peter says the devil prowls the world seeking to devour souls. He tempts us. But the devil is restrained so that the gospel can be spread throughout the entire world. And so the church has grown so much so that in the first century, most of the world was shrouded in a pagan darkness and didn't know God at all. Now, a third of the world is Christian, and half the world, more than half, believes in the one true infinite God. So in one sense, the devil is restrained. But you might be wondering, well, couldn't God have just destroyed the devil and freed us from sin? You're right. God could have done a lot of things differently in salvation history. He could have gotten rid of certain human beings, only let certain human beings exist. We always wonder, why didn't God do things a different way? But I think that a good answer to this, why God allows evil, because here's the thing, even if God, the devil was gotten rid of, the devil can't make you do something wrong, right? Can the devil force you to be bad? Hey, Robert, are you there?
No.
He's there, yes, yeah. But the devil cannot force you to do bad.
So, Robert, he can't make you do bad things. You have to choose to do it, to choose to say yes to him. Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So even if God did that, there would still be the problem of human beings like you and me who can freely choose to say yes to evil. And so God allowed us to have this freedom, and he gave the devil this kind of freedom to obey or follow him. So why would God do that? Well, we don't totally know why God allows evil to exist, allows people like the devil or you or me to exist knowing we can do bad. But what we do know is that God is all-knowing and he's all-powerful. So he knows everything and he has unlimited power. He can do anything logically possible. So because of that, God can always bring more good from any evil that exists. And if God tried to get rid of every evil, he'd get rid of every good too. Let me give you an example of one good that can come from this. Robert, is it a good thing when you tell the devil no?
Yes.
Okay, so if God got rid of the devil, he'd also get rid of all the good times when you told the devil no and did the right thing. So it's a good thing that God allows you, Robert, and me, Trent, and Cy, our opportunities to choose to do the good. And it's a real good because we're choosing to do it even though the devil tempts us. So are you going to keep saying yes to God and no to the devil?
Yes.
I'm glad to hear
you
that.
You are a good man. You know all the right answers, Robert. Thank you very much for that question. I hope it was helpful. Now, will you get ready to have a Merry Christmas, please?
Yes.
All right. I hope you do. I hope you and your family all have a Merry Christmas. Thank you, Robert. And call again sometime. We really like talking with you. It's Kids Open Forum today. We got a bunch of kids in the studio. We had cookies, but then Tom Nash showed up, and now we got no cookies left. The number, if you want to call from home, 888-318-7884. We will try. I don't want to make any promises, but we'll try to alternate between kids in the studio and kids who call in. We'll do our best to get everybody on 888-318-7884. Up next, we have Sophie. And hello, Sophie.
Hi.
What's your connection to Catholic Answers? Are you connected via the brilliant and talented marketing director, Donna Barrick?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are? Okay. And she's your sister?
She's my mom.
Oh, she's your mom. Okay. All right. I'm just waiting to see if you're going to say anything else. Sophie, go ahead. You have a question for Trent?
Yes, I do. I was wondering if it's okay for people to send different parts of saints' bodies off into other countries of the world.
Ah, okay. We have seen a lot of that.
Yes.
May I just ask you, Sophie, do you have anybody in mind? Was there any saint? Because I know that there was the heart of, who was it, saint who? Philip? St. John Vianney came around the United States a few years ago, or maybe a year ago. But you're just thinking in general.
Yeah, in general.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, I think the Pope just recently gifted a relic to the Eastern Orthodox. I remember hearing something about that in the news or something similar. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that too, but I can't remember.
I can't fit the details. St. Peter. Yeah. So one of the relics to the Eastern Christians. So
yeah.
But you're right. So, okay, so your question is it okay to be sending these body parts of the saints to different churches? Why are you, do you think like there's something, because normally, let me guess, you think like, well, normally we bury people in the ground. We don't, you don't send pieces of you or me to everybody else. Right.
So I like that's gross face. Thank you, Sophie.
Right. So why do we, so then we could ask the question, why does the church allow sharing body parts of saints around the world, but we ask for people like you or me, most people are buried in the ground and their bodies are kept together? Well, the reason is that through a very long tradition in the church's history, going all the way back to the Old Testament, actually, we've seen that God is able to work miracles and is able to work through the bodies of holy men and women. So this goes all the way back to the Old Testament, actually. So in 2 Kings chapter 13, verse 21, there were some men who were digging a hole and they threw a dead body into it, and the body touched the bones of the prophet Elisha, and that guy came back to life. For our radio listeners, Sophie's eyebrows are right up to her scalp, actually. So have you ever heard of that story?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. So
nice job, Donna. Yeah, no, she's never heard that story. Okay, it's in a thing called the Bible, but you're a great mom. You're a great mom.
I think that's okay. Most Catholic families don't sit around, all right, kiddos, let's read from 2 Kings, then we're going to hit Chronicles.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help.
It's basically the same story from a different perspective.
Sorry, Donna. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you want to have family-friendly Bible time...
Don't invite me.
No, I was going to say certain books, the Old Testament, Judges, well...
Yeah, you got to be careful about some of them.
Judges
yeah,
is
right.
A book about what not to do. So then we fast forward to the New Testament. And there we see God working through not just the body parts of his holy ones, but things even connected to those body parts. So, for example, in the book of Acts, it says that when the sick saw St. Peter was walking through town, they laid out on the street so that his shadow would pass over them and they would be healed. There were other people who went and took these handkerchiefs, like these rags from St. Paul's workshop. St. Paul, he preached the gospel, but he also made money as a tent maker. And so he had like kind of a workshop, basically, and he had an apron and rags, and people would go and take those to heal other people. So the lesson we learn from Scripture in the church's history is that God is able to work through, providentially, through even the very body parts and the things that those body parts have touched when it comes to holy people, the people who are saints. And so the church wants to continue to bless people throughout the world by allowing people to have the opportunity to experience God's providence and healing and maybe even the miraculous through an interaction with one of these relics, to let us know that our faith is real and God worked through real material means that we can be aware of. And when the church does this, we don't reject the teaching that these saints will be raised from, you know, that they will be restored with their bodies at the end of the world, the resurrection of the dead. See, the church teaches that you have to bury someone in the ground, like you can't take their ashes and just scatter. Have you ever heard of people scattering ashes at sea? Yeah. So a lot of times when people scatter ashes in places, they think that death is the end, and they think that, okay, well, at least this person will become a tree. But we don't think death is the end. It's the transition to the next life, and we're going to be raised from the dead. So that's why we believe in preserving the body and knowing where it is and keeping it together to understand, to help that message to be understood. That's not undermined when we share relics of the saints, because we still know where they are. We don't just like, here you go on a Saturday. We know where they go, where, what church they reside with, and that's done so that people can be benefited from the spiritual benefits and blessings that come from those holy men and women. So does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Sophie. Thank you for coming in. If you think of any more questions, you're allowed to come again.
Okay.
You're allowed to come a second time, although Trent will probably try to make you bring him a cookie.
Thank you, Sophie. I still got some here. I'm not out yet. So
you got a great mom, Sophie. Okay, I'm so overwhelmed and tired from all the cookies I've eaten. I think Rose Staples is going to read the ad for us. Come on, Rose. Here you go.
We've got a brand new ebook we've just released, and it's free. Visit shop.catholic.com today and look for the banner at the top of the page to download your free copy.
Rose Staples, everybody. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
People often wonder about the power of prayer. Why do we pray anyway if we end up having to do so much work for ourselves? Well, the reality is we find ourselves up against a wall and we pray. It's like God turns a light up on the other side of that wall, brighter and brighter and brighter until the light shines through the tiniest cracks. God might not do it all for me, but he shows me how to make my work more efficient so that together we can accomplish all things through his grace.
I think we've worn the Catholic Answers kids out for a little while, so if you want to call, this is the perfect time to call. If you are a kid and you have permission to dial the phone, 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Rose did a really good job, didn't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's pretty good, that Rose Staples.
You better believe it.
Colton in Oregon is next. Colton, are you there with us?
Yes.
How old are you, Colton?
9.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Colton. What is your question for Mr. Horn?
How was God created?
That's a good question, Colton.
Yeah, it is.
Do you think that, why did you ask this question? What made you ask it?
I'm always wondering how he was, like, created.
Mm-hmm. That's a natural question to ask, Colton, because we think usually everything that we see in this world was created by something else. So sometimes we think, okay, that means everything's been created, but that's not the case with God. God was never created. God created everything, and God even made time and space. So God doesn't sit around in time like you or me. He sees the past, the present, and the future all at once. God just is. He just is being and existence itself. That can be hard for us to get our head around, but let me ask you another question. I really like trains. Do you like trains?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and actually the term for someone who likes a train, it's called a ferroequinologist. It means an iron horse enthusiast. So when I was your age, I really enjoyed trains. Now let me ask.
You're getting into some Jimmy Akin territory now, man.
We're getting
You better
there.
Be careful.
So
ferroequinologist.
It is. It's a train enthusiast. So when we think of a train, right? If we ask, like, if you saw a boxcar moving, like a caboose moving on a train track, does something, another car has to be pulling that caboose for it to move, right? The caboose can't move on its own?
Yeah.
Okay. And then something's got to pull that car too, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. What car pulls the locomotive? Does any car, is on a train, is there anything in front of the locomotive?
No.
Right. So the locomotive is a different kind of car. We don't ask what pulls the locomotive. It's different than all the cars. It's the reason all the cars move. So in the same way that we don't ask what pulls the locomotive, because the locomotive is the reason the whole train is moving at all, we don't ask what made God, because God is the reason that anything was made. God is just the creator. He was never made. He has always been, and he always will be. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's a good question.
That was a really good question, man. Are you planning on having a Merry Christmas? Okay, good. It's an excellent plan. Thank you for calling. I hope you will call again sometime. We really enjoyed talking with you. We're doing a kids open forum today. Kids can ask any question they want of one of the world's great apologists, Trent Horn. Part of that statement might have been an exaggeration, but nonetheless, I don't mean it because not any question they want. That was the part that was the exaggeration.
I don't know which one I was willing to give up, worlds or greatest. It's like, do I want to be known throughout the world, or would I rather be greatest in a very small, isolated area?
Yeah.
I'll go with greatest, I guess, in a little tiny area might be better. Well, rather than worlds, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
You're actually great either way.
Oh, you're never going to get a negative statement out of Luke Staples. He's always a nice guy. He's always a gentleman and a scholar and a good friend. I'm so glad you have come back to hang out with us. Luke, do you have any questions or anything, or you just want to hang out in the studio with us?
Yeah. The last question I gave you was just one that I actually got off from the top of my head.
Oh, so you came with a better question now? Is that it?
Yeah, a real one.
Oh, that other one seemed real, and thanks for...
it seemed pretty legit to me.
All right, go ahead. Give us a real question.
Sure.
Okay. So my question is, God has always existed, but time, as we know it, has had a beginning. And if God has existed infinitely before time even began, what has God been doing all that time?
What do you do in the Staples home? What is going on over there at the Staples home?
And is there any way of knowing for us how, what he has been doing?
You are a philosopher, Luke.
That's great.
I wish Carlo was here.
This question has been asked for a really long time, actually. It's been asked for a very long time. What was God doing before he made the world? And St. Augustine, actually, he had kind of a joking response to this. St. Augustine said that, not St. Augustine didn't say this, but he said that this is a common answer in his time when people posed this question. What was God doing before he made everything? God was making hell for people who ask questions like that.
Oh, don't believe him, Luke. You're safe. No. Do not worry. You're okay.
Now, that was not Augustine's answer, but it was kind of his joking reply, and he said that other people kind of would make that joke because, you know, they didn't want to answer the question because it's really hard. You know, what's God doing? And the problem here is that we tend to think of the creation of the world as if time existed on kind of an infinite timeline. And then the world came into being at some point along that. And that's not the case. And you said earlier, you were right. You said that when God made the universe, he also made time. Time had a beginning. So we would say, you know, in our observable universe, that the time originated about 13.7 billion years ago at an event that we call the Big Bang. So what was God doing before that? We have to be careful here about using the word before. Because there was no time before the beginning of time. So when we say before, we don't mean prior in time. We mean prior in explanation or reason. So it's not like there was a time before the Big Bang when God chose to make the universe, but God is the reason there was a beginning of time. So what was God doing? Once again, when we ask the question like that, we already presuppose a false view of what God's life is like. Because God is timeless, right? You can say yes to the microphone.
Yes.
Okay, very good. So God is timeless. What that means, why is God timeless? Remember when we talked about the incarnation? And the problem with the incarnation, or at least we have the difficulties, is because God does not what?
I know. C-H. I remember it.
Nope, I've lost it.
Change.
Remember you said that God doesn't change.
Oh, yeah. God doesn't change. He's not affected by time or space.
Right. So here's the thing. Let me expand your mind a bit. What is time?
Time measures change.
Hey, that's right. That's a very good...
You did not expand his mind. His mind was already there.
Oh, no. It's very good. You know, Luke, I go to a lot of universities and I'll give talks on God and I will ask that question. And most people in the audience have a very blank look on their face.
I would.
Or they will say that time is a magazine doing all right in its subscriptions. So you're right. Time is a measure of change. So if God does not change in any way, shape, or form, then... Without creation, before God, you know, when God doesn't make time, there is no time because God doesn't change. So we can't use verbs that end with ing to describe God at all his activities, like what God is doing, because that would imply that God is changing in some way or he's undergoing a process. Rather, we have to imagine that God is one perfect, infinite act of being. So God doesn't have to think like you or me because he has all knowledge. He doesn't have to act like you or me because he just is. He doesn't have to go along the journey. He's just there. And that was God's existence without creation. But as a part of God's will, he willed that creation would also exist as an expression of his love, though he didn't do it in a temporal series. It's just a part of what he willed as a part of his divine nature. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Well, as best as it can when we're getting into abstract concepts here, but it's a very good question. So the short answer is, prior to the creation of the world, logically prior, there was no time. God was not changing. He was not doing anything. He is just perfect existence itself. But as that perfect existence, God willed that creation would come to be in order to receive his superabundant love. So thanks for bringing the tough ones to us, Luke. You're always good for that.
Yeah. Hey, your sister read an ad. You going to read an ad later?
Yeah, I think I will.
Okay. All right. Right. You, loads of enthusiasm for that. Thanks, Luke.
Yep.
I'll see you by the cookies in a few moments.
Yep. You're welcome for the question.
Jacob in Raymond, Illinois, you are next. Are you there with us, Jacob?
Yes, I am.
Your question, please, for Mr. Trent Horn.
Oh, yes. So I go to a public school. I mean, I live in a small town in Illinois.
Yeah.
And it's a public school, and I'm one of the very select few, you know, Catholic. A lot of people are, you know, either Protestant or atheist in my school. And I get a lot of questions about the topics of the main views of the church. And one of the main two I get are on gay marriage and on abortion.
Yeah.
Sure. And I was wondering, I usually get a question about abortion, and they said, they asked me, they go, Jacob, where in the Bible does it say abortion is completely wrong? Mm-hmm. And so my first question is, where does the Bible talk about abortion? And then from the second part is, how do I combat it from there?
Sure. And I think, Jacob, what you should do in these situations is you should ask the other person questions, which is interesting. I would say to this person, well, let's suppose the Bible does not say abortion. Let's say the Bible did say abortion was wrong. You could ask them that. Let's just suppose it does say it. I could show you that. Would you agree that abortion is wrong? Do you think these people would agree, or they would probably be for abortion anyways?
They would probably be for abortion anyways.
So then I think you could say, then why do you care if it's in the Bible or not? Because even if the Bible said abortion is wrong, you'd still think that it was okay. And you could also ask them, you're also assuming that I, as a Christian, only believe things that are found explicitly in the Bible. So that might be a problem for some Protestants who believe in sola scriptura. But as Catholics, our beliefs are not restricted to the written word of God alone. So I think it's important to get at the root of what people are saying. You can ask them, look, let's say it did say it's wrong. You wouldn't change your mind. Why do you think abortion is okay? Let's just leave the Bible off to the side. Why do you think it's okay? And then you can have a conversation with them about the issue of abortion. Now, when it comes to the Bible, this would be my response. I would say, well, the Bible doesn't explicitly say that abortion is wrong. It also doesn't say that child pornography is wrong or that hijacking airplanes is wrong. It doesn't. There's a lot of things in Scripture that are not explicitly condemned. But there are principles there that allow us to know, okay, we shouldn't do these things. So we could say, look, the Bible says you shouldn't kill human beings, shouldn't kill innocent human beings. That's in the Bible, thou shalt not kill. Proverbs 6:16, I think, says God hates hands that shed innocent blood. And then you can ask them, all right, well, is an unborn child a human being? Do they have innocent blood? Are they an innocent human being? And so that to me is an easier way than trying to find something in Scripture, though you can point them to places where the Bible clearly says an unborn child has life as a human being, like how John the Baptist leapt in his mother's womb. But I think what's important is that we show these children are human beings from science. So, Jacob, stay on the line, though. Do not hang up. Absolutely do not hang up. Stay on the line. Our call screener will get your contact information. I will send you my book, Persuasive Pro-Life. All right? Sound good?
Okay. That sounds fine.
Perfect.
All right, Jacob. Sorry the music started playing right there in the middle of the answer, but it's we really do appreciate the question. It's a kids' open forum today on Catholic Answers Live. If you would like to call, we'll do our very best to get you on if you're a kid and if you have permission to dial the phone, 888-318-7884. Trent is going to be back for the second hour. We'll also have more kids from right here at Catholic Answers to come and ask their questions. So hang on with us. We'll be right back with more Kids Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live.